afternoon. Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. It is July 12th, 2026. Just for reference, my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
What do you got for us, Willis?
Well,
what went on this week?
What went on? Well, it was a...
Nobody lives through 2026. I guess that's what we're learning.
Yeah, no kidding. 2026 has not been a good year so far.
No. It's taking everybody out.
Yep.
One person it didn't take out, thank goodness, well, it's you, for starters, but is the plumber. Tell you what, you need a plumber sometimes. Sometimes you decide to do it yourself. Ooh, bad idea. Never works out. Alex, can you do plumbing?
No, that is not one talent that I possess.
Non-starter?
No.
Yeah, we were going to replace all these faucets in our bathroom, so it was like 5 faucets, right? And I'm thinking, that's not that hard. I've replaced faucets before. And then I'm thinking, oh, I'll be upside down in the cupboard, and it's going to hurt my back. That's going to suck. I'm going to have to pay for the chiropractor. I thought, it'd be cheaper to hire a plumber. So I charged us a flat rate to do these faucets, and the first 3 faucets took like the entire day. And I thought, oh, this is going to be a much higher bill than I planned on. This is going to suck. He had to come back and do the other 2 faucets on a different day because basically the day ran out. There was kind of a leak and there was a drain issue and there was a thing and another thing. And I thought, yeah, my home improvement project, boo.
When your first thought is, this is going to suck.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's not going to be a good day.
Yeah, read the tea leaves. Well, the thing is, he only charged me the flat rate for all the faucets. Even though it took him like the whole day, and it wasn't his fault, it was really the... He even fixed my neighbor's faucet, because we used her hose to wash something out because my water was off, and then the handle flew off, and so she got a free faucet fix out of it. But his name is Robert Gutierrez. If you live in the Reading area, you should call the Hot Water Plumbing Hero, because honestly, he is a hot water plumbing hero. He was the one who saved us when our hot water heater broke, and we wound up having to take showers at the clubhouse, and yeah, it was a whole big thing. Robert saved us then. We had him come back and do faucets, and he's coming back to do the toilets, too, because we have some stuff going on there. And he, like, fixed that, and then we're calling the home warranty, and he's going to do it under that. So, Hot Water Plumbing Hero, can't go wrong. And their website, I think, is hotwaterplumbinghero.com, but I forgot to pull it up on my phone correctly. And let's see if I can do that really, really fast. Oh, of course not. I'll look it up. We'll do it at the break. So if you're having a plumbing issue, I got the guy. You should use him. It'll save you time. All right. So speaking of supply chain problems.
Speaking of that.
That's my segue. Speaking of supply chain problems, this whole thing with the oil and gas issue, all the types of fuel, maybe we should say a fuels issue in California, we have been covering this extensively. And the fact that it hasn't really necessarily, it's hit the media for those of us that are watching, but a lot of people aren't watching and they're like, oh, you guys are alarmists. You said that there was going to be shortages and all this stuff and nothing's happening. Today might give you a little window into maybe why that hasn't happened yet. And help you understand that that doesn't mean it's not coming. So I've 2 people for you today. We have Mike Ariza, who is a refinery operations specialist, and he has been on for a long time. He started this mess, not the lack of fuels, but he used to work at the Benicia refinery there and called my office, and we got to talking, and that's what sparked this whole extended discussion back in December. So we have a tab on the page. You can get to it directly by going to gascrisis.org. And I added another drop down under that today for just the supply chain issue. I was going to put it in the articles. We have articles. We have video. We've got a ton of interviews. There's a lot of really good information. We've got letters from the refineries on how the California Air Resources Board is impacting their ability to operate and or decisions to leave, which I'm sure we'll cover today. But all of that is on there. You can go read it, send it to people. You can listen. You've got every media available for you, watching, reading, listening. And the supply chain is one specific thing. So we have CJ Nord on with us today. She has a company called Supply Chains for Good. So with I hate reading the bio because it makes people sound boring, and they're much more interesting than that. But she has worked with government, private entities, and bottom line is her whole focus is to avert major disruptions to the supply chain, which is probably how she got interested in the fuels issue, and to support public safety. In 2019, her personal battle with cancer fueled her drive to make broader impact, leading her to establish supply chains for good, protectors of children and family prosperity. Wouldn't you think that the government should have that as their tagline, you know, protecting children and family prosperity? We don't, though. Through this innovative platform, she leverages supply chain methodologies to tackle pressing societal issues, driving legislative changes, and fostering impactful initiatives. Notably, she's the architect behind the pioneering There's Cash in That Trash, which is a profit-driven circularity program. That's a new word, circularity. I think she invented it. Supplychainsforgood.org is the website. She does all sorts of things, and I'm skipping to the bottom because we'll add the other things in later, but her dog is still unimpressed. And I included the dog's picture, who is wearing a tie. It's probably why they're unimpressed, because if you have a dog that wears a tie, I mean, it's pretty hard to impress them. Our dog is small. I shoved her in the shower this morning. She was unimpressed, too.
She was very unimpressed.
Super unimpressed.
She liked it when she got out, though.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, so Mike and CJ, I hope you're not having any plumbing problems, and I hope you've got some, I was going to say good news on the fuels front, but I think that that announcement's way premature. I don't know who wants to start. We're all in different places, just for context here. So Bill and I are in the studio. Mike's probably on his way to work, and CJ is probably ironing ties for her dog. I'm not sure. Because that tie looks very pressed.
He has very high standards.
It looks right? Looks like very high standards. That's what happens when you have short hair. You get outfits. Well, the one thing I really do hope people go to the page for today, because your graphic on the California fuel supply chain then and now, like before refinery closures and after refinery closures, actually,
yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's the best snapshot, really. If you were going to look at this as a snapshot, the issue, it lays out all the economic problems, national security problems, and I don't think people realize like the emissions and all that. I'm kind of excited for you to tell us about that, but you guys can start wherever you want. You chat together frequently.
Yes, we do. We've actually adopted each other.
Nice.
Normally as siblings.
Brother and sister.
Got a prenup on the dog, though?
By the way, the dog's name is Maxwell Smart, and that's the closest I get to a boss.
Missed it by that much. Yes, Maxwell Smart, my favorite. He's my hero.
Hey, Aaron, before we go too much further, you said something that made me laugh so hard, and I just want to talk about that just a little
circularity?
Bit.
Circularity?
As you said, that did get a laugh out of me, too, though. The mission of my company is the protection of children and family prosperity, and yes, by all means, that should be the tagline for government, because government is only our supplier of services and infrastructure. That's their job. That's their only job.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Right?
And instead,
yeah,
we're doing all sorts of other stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I really do like that. I mean, that is the whole point, right? This, like, the supply chain in general is supposed to basically make it so that we're not weaving our own clothes at our house. I mean, this is why we can go out and function and do other things, because we have a supply chain.
Absolutely. It absolutely is that. And the people that, you know, the elected officials who, whether we like them to or not, are manipulating our supply chain, our livelihood, all the rest of that, they don't know anything about supply chain. They don't know how to do it. And then we see error after error after error come up that we're all subjected to, right? And this issue with the fuel situation is certainly one of those errors, and they've absolutely, in this effort to protect the environment, blown it. They've blown it. Because the CO2 emissions from the ocean freight are, what, 500,000 metric tons a year?
Yeah, and the whole point of getting rid of the refineries was supposed to make, because we had to get rid of all those dirty refineries and all that nasty oil that we were bringing up out of the ground, et cetera, et cetera. But, yeah, that isn't the net result of that.
No, and, you know, I think this is all one of the contributing elements that I see that got us here is we're Americans, as Californians, all the rest of that, we're infighting too much. And, you know, and whether or not we disagree about people on their fundamental beliefs, we all have work that we need to do together.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the examples of folks doing that well is the Problem Solver Caucus in Sacramento. You know, they're just putting all those differences aside. And, you know, math is math. And you know, we can all get together and agree on the results of mathematical.
Well, apparently we can't, but we should.
Well, you know,
because that should be called a fact, right? Facts should be facts.
Well, one of the things that supply chain teaches you is how to really analyze data, right? One of the things that we might get shouted at us by a boss in case we've blown an analysis is you need to know why the data is the data. You don't need to just know the data. Don't just show me a bunch of numbers. Why is that data the data, right? And that makes you dig in just a heck of a lot deeper. And when we started digging into why is that data the data, we started to find things like the port capacity maybe being maybe the electives were presented with the theoretical port capacity rather than actual. Maybe the electives were only presented with fuel sales as a result of taxable sales, which overlooked military and aviation, right? So I'm not even sure that the data provided was accurate to begin with.
But then there's logic, right? So at some point you look at that and you think, well, I might need... I mean, can you think of a scenario where a person who cared about the issue, who was, you know, fairly smart, could look at a skewed set of data and decide that it was smart to close all our refineries?
Can I think of a logical?
Yeah, I mean, can you think of something that would have been presented that didn't like ping all your spidey senses and you're like, hey, wait a second. You know, I mean, how did they get sold that bill of goods, right?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot. You know, we could certainly have lots of discussions about how we got here, and you know, together if we're off the air and you're sharing a bottle of wine, we could have a deeper discussion, right? But really, the problem at hand, the problem that's literally in our hands that we have to solve, is the situation that we're in right now, and we've got we of course have. Let me just run through this a little bit. So the fuel supply chain, really the petroleum supply chain, has multiple phases. And anybody could talk about how each one of the political parties, or the major political parties, maybe owns a piece of the disruption for each phase of it. So up, as we say, upstream, closest to the extraction point, there's been damage to the extraction oil field infrastructure that will probably take years to get back together. And that's years and billions of dollars until that's restored, and that's after the fighting stops, right? There's the logistical problem that we all see on the news. Now, even if we got oil tomorrow, we couldn't make it into fuel, and that capacity to make oil into fuel and the oil upstream, that's gone from the world. There's no replacement for it in place, right? That's something that people need to really understand. They seem to think that something comes together and magically that problem gets solved. Nuh-uh. There's no magical solution to this. The third that I think really should be on people's radar, because we don't want to forget something so important, is that we have lost a lot of gas stations in rural communities, you know, your mom-and-pop gas stations. I'm not sure exactly how many closed, but that was due to the requirement for the dual underground tank. And we may, that needs to be mapped for emergency preparedness, because a lot of that's wildfire-prone areas. And we may end up with a situation where, you know what, the fire truck can't refuel. We can't put that fire out because we can't refuel.
Sure, too much distance.
Exactly. And, you know, they used to think it was there, and now it's 40 miles away, right? So each phase of the petroleum supply chain has got a major problem in it, and that's why I'm proposing to our elected in D.C. that, you know, we use whatever, if it takes federal money to reopen Valero, let's do it. Let's bring the CBs and the Army Corps of Engineers into this. We have to reopen that refinery as rapidly as possible. We also need to, for the good of the nation, extract California oil. Maybe we don't need to do that forever, but we've got to do it right now. And those are just, as I see it, really hard facts, and those are what we need to do to protect children and families, not just in California, but everywhere.
Sure. And I'm curious, let's take a really quick break and come back. I'm curious if you have gamed out the, you know, the ability of them to, you know, sue all of that, stop it, and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of curious on that one, because it seems like that's where everything winds up, wrapped around, you know, an axle somewhere with a judge. Got to take a really quick break. Obviously, this is going to be another cheerful show. All the fun was at the beginning, but the fun is over. There will be some intermittent screwing around, and there may be some funny songs, but other than that, you should probably switch to decaf right now.
Yep.
So you are listening to We the People, and you can find us at
wethepeopleradio.com.
Oh, but ain't that America? You and me, ain't that America? Something to see, baby, ain't that America? Home of the free, yeah. Little pink houses for you and me.
Celebrated the imperfections. I got my slide rule from school. You add it up, and it don't add up. Maybe shed some light on it too. And I'm just inches close to the finish. Cross it and bid you adieu. I calculated every combination, every misdirection, every subtle deception. Kickstart my thinking, I was lost in space, staring at a spot on the moon. Negotiating the anticipation of reentering the atmosphere too soon.
Okay, so I want to put that guy in charge of the legislature. He's the guy giving the information to people making the decisions. Somebody needs to get their slide rule from school. What the heck? So if we did that, I'm using the term we loosely, but if that were to be done, the federal government were to come in and say, look, you guys are creating a massive national security problem, and obviously you don't care. So we're going to reopen this refinery and do all those things that you said. Do you think that's possible to actually do in a timely fashion, or would they just be tangled up forever?
Well, let me just say this about that.
I mean, obviously we're just spitballing here, you know, me and you.
Yeah, no, it has to be done. And, you know, whenever people ask questions like that, and believe me, Erin, it's 100% a valid question, and I totally get where you're coming from on it. You know what it always reminds me of is during World War II, the time he's right here at my feet, naturally. Anyway, no, it reminds me of Winston Churchill during World War II and the Tiny Fleet. And the Tiny Fleet was the UK's fishing boat. People with just boats, citizens with boats, came and literally rescued their military in a situation where most of the British military was in trouble. Literally, people coming out of their homes going, nobody's going to get our boys but us, right? If you look, if somebody had said even a day before that happened, if that could happen, they would say that's flatly impossible. We have to have our Winston Churchill hat on and power through whatever impossible we meet along the way.
Yeah.
You know, if we're defeated by impossible, I would say it's because...
Oh, well, I would never say it's not worth
smart enough.
Yeah, not worth doing. I mean, obviously, it's 100% worth doing, and doing nothing. How about this?
Not an option.
Do you want to move forward with this? Do you want to take the bird's eye view from if we do nothing, this is how it turns out, or we have to do something and this is what it looks like? Because those are really two different sort of routes. Which route you want to take us on?
I'm going to take it on that we have to do something because we have to.
Okay.
Right? And also because as unreasonable as it seems, I think that there are enough political elements involved for it to move to the next level. So I absolutely concede that there's some really severe lack of logic being demonstrated at the state and also the municipal level. Now that matters when that municipality is Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Right? As, you know, Los Angeles is as big as many states. You know, so it matters that that's the municipality. And that's why I've gone to California's federally elected senators and congresspeople and asked them to have essentially California take care of its own house, right? The federal level for California elected come and intervene at the state and local level, and let's get our house in order before FEMA and the DOD exercise the powers that they have during wartime and that this situation warrants. And, you know, I think that the people who... are watching the actions of the folks that are like really kind of severe on one side when it comes to environmental, and that, you know, we're all back here. Everybody else cares about the environment too. I'm, you know, proud to say that I'm an enrolled member of the Standing Rock Sioux, right? And so they don't own love for the environment. The rest of us love it, too. Their math doesn't work. Their logic doesn't work, right? And I think that if the folks who everybody is viewing as you're putting California out of business, you're doing all of this stupid stuff, if they step up and say, you know what, we finally hear you, we're going to get moving on fixing it, as hard as that is, they will find that the response to that demonstration of integrity is really strong and really positive. Because the best leaders step up and say, you know what, I was wrong about that. Sorry, let me fix it. Those are the best leaders in the world. So hopefully they see the light there. But if not, you know, we're going to manage our supplier of services and infrastructure and do our best to make them, you know, see the light and do the right.
Yeah. And that, Because the graphic that people can't see, I mean, the good news is, you know, we can all do these interviews and, you know, our T-shirts with our hair standing on end, you know, so there's kind of a benefit there. But then there's the part about we could even drink wine together, actually, like this, because wine makes everyone in my family wear other people's clothes. So, you know, we could do that over the radio, too. That would be a lot less telling. But
all right.
I like that, Mike. I like the groan in the background. That was well timed.
Or maybe whiskey shots.
That doesn't make us wear other people's clothes, actually. That just makes us talk faster. But this graphic, I'm looking at this graphic, and I can't show anybody this because we're on the air, but or on the radio. But on the one side, you know, before the refinery closure, the local supply chain was California oil production to the California refinery, to the pipeline and trucks, to the consumer. Four little deals. The next one has seven. Seven. I mean, this is what they've turned it into. So, and it starts with foreign oil. You would think that would be the deal breaker right there.
You know, one of the things that we're not talking about, that Mike and I, we talked about this, and this helped lean into his expertise.
if he wants to be seen
sure
with us right now.
Fuel? Yeah, I don't. If he does, he's a love. Everybody's sure that fuel coming through our ports is of the same quality as the stuff that was made
exactly.
in California. I'm sure it's not going to solve it. I'm sure it's not going to raise any vehicle warranty problems. Oh, I'm sure it's fine to put into our BMWs and Mercedes in California. It won't cause any engine damage. No, don't worry about that.
Well, I'm sure they test it all when it comes in. You know, I'm sure it's all tested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Watch those assumptions. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of Stan's biggest points.
Yeah, because that's...
Doctor, brother.
That's just a huge consideration. And getting out from under that... So if you were going to sketch this for somebody who really didn't understand the difference between, you know, using our own oil, the four-part deal. Our refineries, our pipelines off to the consumer. And then you're going to go to foreign oil, foreign refineries, ocean tankers, California ports, storage terminals, trucks, and then the consumer. I like that you have like your benefits, you know, shorter distance, multiple supply points, stronger energy independence. I just don't think people realize how big a deal that is. And supports California jobs and tax revenue back to the families and safety and whatnot.
Right.
But the other, after the refineries close, the risks, greater dependence on foreign supply and global events. Well, I think the history of late would prove that. Vulnerable to port disruption, you have labor disputes, fires, earthquakes, weather, cyber attacks, military incidents, higher cost, longer lead times, higher transportation-related emissions. So for the environmentalists, there you go. Increased pressure on every link in the supply chain, and reduced energy resilience and national security. There's like no benefit to that.
Well, I don't see how you ever get back to an affordable price on fuel if you maintain that system. I can't see prices ever going down.
They won't go down. They will only go up. Whenever you have removed a source of supply, price will go up. Period. End of story. That's why they call it the law of supply and demand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had talked to Mike a little bit before the show about those supply chains. Can you speak to that?
Well, going with the impact of the war, we started seeing crude oil cut off to all of the Asian countries that were supplying us. Remember, we're importing 35 to 40% of all of our fuel now is being imported from Asia. When that crude oil got shut off, and this is where, you know, people would say, well, you know, you were saying we were going to run out. Well, Professor Miche USC Professor Miche, Professor Rector from Berkeley, and Joe Silvey, he's like a grad student. They all generated a two-page brief, and that went up to the president's level. And their estimates were spot on. It's like the professor says, the math is the math. We were literally on the verge of running out of fuel in May, going in the middle of May. We were getting very, very low. So the biggest thing that really saved California's bacon was the fact that the president waived the Jones Act. What that did, and to let people know, the Jones Act requires American-built and American-staffed tankers or other ships to transport goods from American port to American port. That number of tankers is very limited, and the feds saw the fact that California was, you know, and they're not reporting it to us. The state definitely not saying anything. We were running out of fuel. We were on our way, just like that report said. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the examples and charts that are published now is in the last month and a half, jet fuel that was shipped to us, just in the last month and a half, there's been more jet fuel shipped to the West Coast from the Gulf Coast than what's been shipped in the last 36 years combined. We were that low. We're still low on fuel. We're still low on gasoline. We're still on the verge of experiencing, or in some locations in California, having shortages at this time. That's the same thing with diesel, same thing with gasoline. The refineries are running at 98% on the Gulf Coast, which they can't sustain that forever. And where we have wrote all the way back in our brief in October about the threat to the military, well, if you look at this one graph, they've taken a lot of fuel from defensive zone 3, pad 3, and pad 1, and shipped them over to us because we were running out. So we're taking fuel reserved for other sections of the country, and that the 98% increase on the refineries could not keep up with what we lost. I knew that. You don't have to be a math wizard. It wasn't going to do it. So they have, in fact, been pulling fuel reserves from all over the country with these foreign flag tankers and sending them here. Chevron's been taking Strategic Petroleum Reserve crude oil for the first time ever, shipping it across Panama and then up to California. Hawaii took its first motor gasoline shipments ever in its history from the Gulf Coast. So we were in danger. The report that Miche, Rector, and Sylvie wrote on April 15th that was published, that report was spot on. At the time, the math was the math, and we're still in deep trouble right now. There's been 39 million barrels total of fuel shipped to the West Coast in the last, like, month. And we're still short across all boards right now.
Wow.
I just wanted to add that there are fuel shortages right now at the pump. I went to a Shell station in Long Beach not too long ago, and they were out of two of the three gasoline grades. They only had premium grade. And that's in Long Beach, not far from the port.
Hmm. Yeah, so exactly. That's not a remote area. Right. That's right where everything is.
Right by the port, yeah. Exactly. It doesn't have far to go, right? So if you haven't seen shortages at the pump yet, rest assured you will. It's coming. It just, you know, this is a long supply chain, and there was a lot of product in the, as we call it, the downstream part of the supply chain that is closest to the customer. There's a lot moving through the system, but when that moves all the way through the system, we have these massive gaps behind it that have never existed in the 20th or the 21st century. It's never been this.
Exactly.
See, and as somebody who studies the supply chain, that's that should be a wake-up call, actually. That should be a massive wake-up call.
This situation is, I'm not exaggerating, this is worse than the pandemic.
Oh, yeah.
It's worse than the pandemic, and it is probably on par with what people experienced during World War II. And the one thing that we had during times of war was this War Production Board, where it overlooked the industries of major importance to the military, like steel, right? And said, hey, you need to adjust your production up a little bit, you need to adjust your production down a little bit. It kind of guided the supply chain.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that anymore. That's something that I'm actually proposing, that a agency or a wise governing body, whatever you want to call it, that is sort of like the Fed for the supply chain, that something like that be created in the United States.
Which is pretty
out of our
I mean this yeah. is such a stinging admission on California government, because when this kind of stuff is just alarming to me, because when we're looking at the federal government to save us, you know, honestly, alarm bells should go off in everyone's head. Like, we need more federal government intervention, said usually no one ever. And now that's the escape hatch,
yeah,
which is creepy.
So let me ask.
Okay, we're going to ask her right when we come back, because now we're tardy. So we're coming back, and it's Bill's and it's Bill's turn after the tardy break. Our guest, though, I've had questions. Our guest is C.J. Nord. Mike Ariza has been our guest before. We have him featured prominently at gascrisis.org. We are adding C.J. Nord to our list of best friends. She has 30 years of distinguished leadership in the manufacturing sector, recognized for her supply chain acumen, visionary thinking, steadfast commitment to ethical standards, and her terrific dog and sense of humor. We'll be right back with the both of them. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Transition.
And then there's that. All right. Back to Bill.
Yeah, I just was curious. You know, we have a shortage in the making. You were saying that there are some stations that are already out of certain grades. How do they determine where and who gets the supply we are receiving? How do they depend? Because that's not like government contracts bringing fuel into California. These are private companies that are contracting to ship this gas in. Now, how do they determine where it goes?
You really are asking a very good question, and those are questions that I have asked for state elected officials to meet with me about, and I've also asked for both Valero and Phillips 66 to meet with me about that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be really honest here. I'm terrified that nobody is minding the shop.
Right.
And I would really like to know if the purchases of fuel are being made on the spot market, kind of catch as catch can.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we have a contract that is equal to how much fuel California uses.
Right.
Nobody is answering those critical questions that you just asked.
Yikes.
And, you know, that's where a supply chain Fed would have, they'd have their fingers in that. They wouldn't,
sure.
They'd have that data. They'd know the answers to those questions. Nobody's answering those questions, and that is freaking me out.
Yeah, because I see, I kind of see the military as priority. And as far as consumers receiving gasoline, it wouldn't surprise me to see the bigger metropolitan areas get first grab at everything, and the outlying areas, and you know, like all of Northern California is very spread out, kind of being at the bottom of the list. I don't know. Does that make sense to you?
It does. One of the things that I think that really concerns me a lot that we're not seeing happen right now are efforts to ration fuel. You know, we're not seeing that.
We should be cutting back. Yeah.
Right. There should be discussions about, you know, back in, I'm probably not the only OG on this phone call, right? Remember during Carter's administration, we lowered the speed limit. That's an example of something simple that we can do to decrease the amount of fuel that we use. There's lots of little ways that we could make our fuel stretch further without looking at the whole picture. We don't know that maybe Redding only has 2 days of fuel and maybe Los Angeles County has 40 days. Well, you know, we're not doing anything to balance supply with demand because there's no oversight over the whole process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's a gap that should be on everybody's radar, and that should be really one of the major concerns.
Well, my concern is that this is going to become a huge political issue. And politics is going to play a major role in who's going to get gas and who isn't. And, boy, what a way to control the population to just say, you know, you folks up there have been a problem. You're going to have to just wait for your fuel. You folks down here have been loyal and, you know, you've been doing a good job. You're going to get your fuel first. Man, I can see riots in the streets over that.
Then there's Nevada.
Yeah,
there's the people trapped in the back. Well, they're not even, we've always kind of...
Arizona.
Yeah, we've always joked about those guys as being stuck in the back seat and they can't reach the steering wheel. But I think at this point, they're mostly tied up in the trunk.
They're on the end of the pipeline.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are.
We are up here, too. We are up here, too, in Chico and Redding. The terminals end here. Pipelines end here.
Yeah, it's turning into that meme. What is it? I will put you in a trunk and help people look for you. that's pretty much where we are.
Yeah, and going back to like reanimating Valero. The two of us met. I emailed Dora from California Insider because I saw CJ on there, and it's like, man, that lady really knows a lot about logistics. I'd love to talk with her, and that's how we got together and became buds, you know. And we've been, like she said, we've been kind of working together ever since. The thing with like Valero, you can get, you know, I think there is possibility, there's hope, like CJ is saying, about getting some of these people together, especially these federal representatives of the state, and saying, hey, we need to get some relief on this air requirement, you know, different things to ease up. Because right now, we still got the three letters from the three oil corporations saying, we're going to leave. And now community action group is suing. This is a jewel. There's a community action group, I saw in the LA Times, suing the Air Resource Board because the Air Resource Board changed their, cap and invest requirements, limits, or whatever you want to call it. They adjusted it to help accommodate the other three corporations, seeing that Valero's, you know, basically told them pack sand, shut down, took the $1.1 billion write-off and left the state. Now they got these three letters, and I think they like CJ is saying, some of these folks saw the light or are seeing the light. They saw the light. They made some adjustments to this cap and invest, which is what they wanted, and it was a reasonable request from all three companies, so they were really going to run them through the ringer. And now that they've done that, and for the moment, it looks like they're not going to leave, although we don't know that. We're not in those board meetings. I mean, especially the smaller corporation, PBF. Chevron, they own a lot of oil here, so they're in a different boat. But now you got a company suing the Air Board for actually making a move in the right direction. You know, I could see these companies, you know, PBF, you're going, you know what, never mind, you know.
Yeah.
We're not going to deal with this.
Yeah.
You know, we're done with this. So those are the people that, you know, need to get, they need to, like CJ's been actively, aggressively working on this stuff, to get them to, you know, come around and say, hey guys, we're in a bad spot here. We're in a real bad spot and you need to make some changes. You need to turn the ship here a little bit, or we're going to be in a dire, supply situation. And as far as Valero is concerned, Valero, you're looking at a minimum of $1 billion to bring it back online. And like I wrote 3 or 4 months ago, past the point of no return, you know, your qualified people to bring it back online. I had a couple friends say that they didn't.
That's the kicker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Mike. And so who's going to run it?
Well, that's the thing. You got people like me, but a lot of the people transferred, the personnel, the ladies and the gentlemen that worked there, they transferred to Louisiana. They transferred to Texas. It's like, you think you're going to get them to come back? No. It's just like, it ain't going to happen. You know, some of them, like a lot of my friends hired on in 1990 and they're retired or they're about to retire. But two of them wrote to me that Valero left it in a very unsafe condition. One of them said, Mike, I was very, very concerned for the safety of everybody at the last part of that when it was shut down because they fixed absolutely nothing. So you gotta replace all these different. Oh gosh, there's so much you have to do. Okay. And I was talking with Professor Miche before and it's looking like $800-900 million. But after I've heard about this, and I know some of the things mechanically that they have to inspect and fix just on the base case, and getting these reports from my friends that I worked with, it's going to be well over $1 billion to bring it back online. That one, it's better to not have the federal intervention, but I don't, at this point, I mean, CJ's been doing this logistics for a lot longer than I have, but at this point, I don't see how Valero is going to be able to come back up without some type of federal intervention. With the Defense Production Act. I mean, I guess it's possible, but it's very, very difficult. And again, you got to go back to where are the people to start it up?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can throw money at it, but if you haven't got anybody to run it, that's going to be a problem.
Well,
I'll go do it, but it's hard for me to do myself.
Yeah. Well,
that's why I had suggested bringing in the Army Corps of Engineers and the Seabees. That helps get it up and running. Now, in terms of getting people on the refinery floor, you know, there's no replacement for experience, but there are lots of people who would like a good job at a refinery. A lot of them are the high school students that I work with that are not college-bound students. There's just tons of great kids in high school who are learning how to be an electrician, a plumber, a mechanic. They're, you know, learning how to work with their hands because that's what they want to do, right? So I think that if we took the right approach to it, that we could fill the jobs. Those are really good jobs, right? Somebody's got to come up with $1 billion to restart it. It's not Valero's fault, right? We broke it. We got to fix it.
Yeah. We caused them to abandon ship. I mean, that wasn't an abandoned ship of their own. Wasn't their idea. How about that?
Right. So that money's got to come out somewhere, and you know that's where federal and state have to work together.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. This is all brought on. This is all self, you know, caused. And when you talk about bringing it back online, you know, with a $1 billion price tag, that I don't see any other way around it. But I just see that's going to trickle down to the consumer is going to pay for that. And again,
the bloodbath.
Oh yeah,
man, the news is going to cut us off with more happiness.
Well, you're looking at a huge price increase.
This just in: we're getting cut off by the news. You're listening to We the People, and your music selection will be here shortly. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
All my ways and blame my lack of